From the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company.
Welcome to the hotel hell. Check-in time is now, check-out time is never.
Does my room have cable?
No. And the sheets are made of fire.
Can I change rooms?
Sorry, we're all booked up. Hell convention in town.
With Steve Cofield.
Well, I don't need to shave because it don't grow in right here and right here.
Now you're telling me that you were so ingrained with white trash DNA that your facial hair actually grows in on its own, all white trashy like that?
Ryan McKinnell.
You know, my man got too familiar, man, you know, because, you know, he would step across the line. Habitually, he's a habitual line stepper.
Chrissy Paradis.
This place is crushing my soul.
On ESPN Las Vegas.
Sir, one more outburst, I will strangle you with my microphone wire. You understand me?
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for us.
Big Mac alongside. You like that, Big Mac? You like how Chrissy got herself in the open?
Yeah, she
It's staying, too. It's staying.
Yeah, it's. I see her ego growing just visually, just across from her. It's. You got to watch her.
That's a good feeling. Even though I said, even though the bite I used was, this place is crushing my soul.
It's funny. It's funny because it's true, Chrissy.
It is
funny because it's true.
In a good way, though. It keeps. It's like smites me down.
I'm just glad it's the place crushing your soul. Or was there a hidden message in there?
No, Steve, you have not crushed my soul yet.
Yet.
Keyword.
Believe me, I have plenty of competition around the building, no doubt. I'm actually not in the building today. I'm in Laramie, getting ready for UNLV at Wyoming. Big Mac, nice enough to step over from his 920 The Game show. And it's not a game show, but it's on 920 The Game. And we got a lot of hockey to get into today. Massive news in Major League Baseball. So we'll get to Manny Machado in the next 25 minutes or so. But I do have to set the scene. What is the most remote place you've been, Ryan McKinnell?
The backwoods of Montana, out in the middle of nowhere. Actually, not too far from where you're at right now. A little place called Red Lodge, a town about 30 miles outside of there called Luther, and then a place about 15 miles outside of that, which was about a half hour away from any sort of neighbor, about 2 hours away from any sort of hospital. So I've been there, man.
Why did this happen?
Dad used to have a house out there in the
really?
In the 90s. So we used to spend like Christmas and stuff out there or holidays, and we'd go out there and four wheel and snowmobile and shoot guns and just be a big old group of hillbillies.
Yeah, it's definitely a different lifestyle. I don't know that Laramie is that small. What were the towns in Montana? Luther and what else?
Red Lodge, which is actually a decent-sized town. That's where we would go into, like, with the IGA was there, so we'd go get supplies there, and there were a couple bars in town and some restaurants. It's actually a nice little ski town, and it's actually at the gateway to the northeast entrance of Yellowstone Park. So it's a really nice area, but no, Luther and the adjoining towns, that was it was the middle of nowhere. It backed up essentially to the Beartooth Mountain Range, and it was a very special place. Different people, different area, but it's definitely fun if you're into that. Now, the key word, if you're into that. a Vegas guy like yourself for 20 years, Cofield, and then prior to that, a New Jersey guy, I forgive me, I can't see you really vibing in Laramie, Wyoming.
In a way, it's inviting because you're removing yourself from civilization, and the world is a smaller place now, so...
Oh, yeah.
Imagine doing radio like we do and actually doing it from a place like this. It would be interesting. I don't know if I could take it every day. I'll give you something that was totally 2019 in terms of my reaction last night. The biggest thing I freaked out about is phone reception here. Apparently, this is not a Sprint town. It's mostly a Verizon town. And like for most of the day yesterday, I'm like, wait, we're in a town that has a good-sized university. Wyoming has, like, I think 13,000 undergrads. I'm like, wait, you can't get phone reception in this town? But as it turns out, I guess it's a one- or two-carrier town. But that was weird. And then last night, just trying to get rideshare. They do have rideshare here, which I was a little worried they didn't have Lyft or Uber, but they did. But at the end of the night, because I have to go out to the local gin mills, you know, I got to try them out.
Sure.
Got to see what's cooking. At the end of the night, I'm like, wait a second here. I don't know if I'm going to get one. And now people are going to laugh at this in Vegas. I was probably 2.5 miles from the hotel. And actually, I do, in spite of my fatness, I do actually walk a lot when I go on the road. But it was 3 degrees last night at 11:30. I'm like, I don't think I can do that. Even with all this blubber enveloping my innards. So I was like, I don't think I'm going to get a ride back. So what is going on here?
Did you get a ride back or not? You're leaving me hanging.
Well, I eventually, you know what, I requested, because I go exclusively Lyft because I wasn't happy with Uber after ripping me off last year on a ride that never happened. And
I can appreciate that.
Eventually, I had to upload, or I guess download, Uber and take an Uber back. So I made it back. No. I made it back, and I'll tell you, and you'll see the show is very well prepared today, so I don't want to hear it, right? Don't want to hear it. I will tell you, I may have had a half dozen beers, and there was a convenience store across the way. Do you eat these Taki things?
Oh,
is that what they're called?
Those chip things?
Yeah.
T-A-K-I? No, I don't. I don't do those.
Well, I didn't get those.
Okay. Wait, okay, all right, fair enough.
But the Loaf and Jug, that's actually the name of a convenience store here.
Okay.
Loaf and Jug had a special, and I'm a sucker for specials.
Sure.
So I got some Chex Mix, but it was jalapeno. I have never experienced like drunken glee because of the snacks followed by pain like this before. It was good.
Like good in a bad way? I mean, you're talking about pain. I don't like food and pain, man.
It was my mouth was on fire. I may have been leaking a little bit. Not from the rear end, but from my eyes.
Okay. Well.
Hey, Chris, yeah!
She was taking much pleasure in your pain. She's gleeful.
When I woke up this morning, I'm like, why was I eating that like it was my last meal and my mouth was on fire? What is wrong with me?
Why not?
I enjoyed it, though. It was tasty.
Good
was
for
it,
you.
Was it the fact that it was something you hadn't really seen, so you got excited? It was this. Yeah. Okay.
This is my life. I got that. Yeah. That bag was free. The jalapeno Chex Mix was free.
And you found it. And you found it in Laramie, Wyoming, no less.
Yep. I'm coming back, baby.
coming back for your snacks, Laramie. Actually, you brought up an interesting point, and I can't gloss over it. But you talked about you got boned by Uber last year.
I did, yeah. There was a little miscommunication. Well, it wasn't one of the... Well, you know what? Maybe that was the front end of... Because we've heard about
the scam.
This scam now.
Yes.
Maybe this was the front end of it. I didn't realize it at the time. But yeah, I got doinked. Because I didn't get doinked for like a minor fee. I got the dude or the woman went to another location, never picked me up, and I got charged full price.
Oh, yeah.
And meanwhile, I see it come down full price while I'm in another car, leaving the airport to go home. I'm like, how is this possible? And, of course, I don't know what the deal is with Lyft. I haven't had a call and complain, but there is no calling Uber, I don't think. It's all, you know, DMing, messaging. So I was dissatisfied with their response.
Yeah, that was my thing. It sounds like to me you got scammed, and I had the same thing happen to me at Thomas & Mack last year, about a year ago, actually, around the same time. Same thing. Guy drove around until he passed me. Like, I literally saw him drive past me, and I'm waving at him. He's in his, you know, his Honda Pathfinder, whatever the hell it is. I see him looking at his phone. I'm waving at him. He drives right by me, and he continues to do, like, three circles around the Thomas & Mack perimeter, and then he just goes out in a Tropicana, and he leaves. And I'm just stubborn. Like, I didn't cancel because I felt like I was being scammed, right? I hadn't even heard about this scam, but I knew something was off. I never checked and followed up to see if I got charged for a ride or for anything else, but I knew something was off because of the way he drove by me and avoided eye contact. He wasn't even looking for his pickup. He wanted to show the satellites or whoever, the trackers, that he was in the general area. He stood there he circled for whatever time he needed to, and then he left. So I knew I was being scammed.
Hmm. And what'd you do?
Nothing. I don't use Uber anymore. I use Lyft.
There's not much you can do.
Right.
Because I have a feeling it'll happen the other way, and then, or you get in a desperate situation like last night where Fatso was not going to walk 2.5 miles in 3-degree weather.
I'm shocked you got one.
I got one. I was asking the driver, you know, I might have to, we might have to get Kurt on when Adam's back on. Adam Hill's father, Kurt, decided to move to a place like this. He's in Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, and he does drive rideshare. I just think towns like this are fascinating if there's literally like 8 people. Because that's the woman I took the ride back with last night. I'm like, well, for football Saturdays, that must be kind of cool, you know, when Wyoming plays. And she's like, yeah, we actually, on those days, we run out of rideshare. Like, oh, boy. That's it. She's like, all eight of us are busy. You know? But other nights, if all eight of us are on duty, then a lot of us don't get money.
So. Wait a minute. Should I be flying into Laramie like a stripper from the Midwest comes to Vegas like during football season just so I can earn some extra cash as a rideshare driver up in Wyoming?
Possibly.
Sounds like they might need me.
I think any small town in Nevada would do the trick as well.
Oh, that's true.
I think that you like missed your calling in life. I think
who?
That Ryan, I think being
clearly.
Like an entertainer would, I mean, like, in a different sense than what you do now?
Well, I'd certainly have access to spicy jalapeno Chex Mix, so life would be pretty... thank you, Steve.
Wait, I think Chrissy was saying that you were going to come up here and dance Chippendales.
Yes, that's what I was saying. Thank you, Steve.
Oh, well,
for the assist.
Chris Farley-esque.
There's got to be like, a market for fat strippers, right?
Chris Farley, I mean, yeah, he was like the hottest
Chippendales
I've ever
seen. No,
that
was like
seen.
A joke, Chrissy.
Oh.
That was him. Oops. And Patrick Swayze. No, I mean, serious, like
well,
legit
technically,
money.
Technically, Ryan, in one demo, you're a bear.
Right, for sure. Yeah. I'm not
so
sure.
So there's a market for you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Not with women, but there's a market. Well, actually, no, you've got a very svelte young lady who you're married to, so apparently there's a market
well, maybe
for
I
bears.
Should, maybe I should go bear. And that way there would be no jealousy on my wife's part. It would be a full understanding that, hey, you're just doing it for the cash. There's no threat there. None of these fine ladies are going to try to steal me away because there are no fine ladies. I'm a mercenary. I'm here for the cash. Fork it over, dudes. Let's
that
go.
That almost sounded like you rehearsed that before. Like you've given that speech to yourself in your head.
No,
like you've
I
really
just,
thought about it.
I just have no moral compass. So
yeah,
it's
I like that.
I've rehearsed that part of my life. Not so much this specific bear stripper part. Just the I'll do anything for money part.
More on Laramie as the show moves along. We're going to carry it till 6:30, and we hand it off to John and Robert over at the Arena Auditorium before UNLV and Wyoming tip at 7 o'clock. So Golden Knights go on the road. Well, Ryan, it's not some home jinx. We'll grade this game. Were they competitive in this one? Subban got the start, and the VGK struggles continue.
Follow the Cofield and Company crew around Sin City on Instagram. At ESPN Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Well, not much you can do. We played a good, pretty good game tonight. Like I said, it was a 3-0 game, but it really should have been a 6-5 game. The goalies were excellent. We had 40 shots on net, so like I said, sometimes it's out of your control. We played a good game, I thought.
Wow, Gerard Gallant talking after a loss. None of your business. VGK loses on the road against a sub-500 team in the Avalanche, and this 8-of-9 stretch that started last week, you know, 8-of-9 at home, has turned into a freaking disaster, McKinnell. Big-time disaster. We were talking on this show about, after that 9-game stretch, logging upwards of 15 points. To this point, you've had at least a bright spot, but beyond that, what the hell is going on? What happened last night?
Well, what happened last night, I would like to say is a bit of an anomaly, but as you said, I mean, the recent struggles would point to it being more of a consistent concern than anything else, right? I think when you look at this team, it's clear that we're dealing with a different team. Consistency is on some level an issue. We're got, I think it's 21 games. So 21 games left in the season. We're entering that last quarter of the season where, I mean, straight up, Steve, you can't have games happen like last night, right? It's bad enough that Colorado is not a very good team, especially in the second half of the season. They've been quite terrible, as a matter of fact. They hadn't won a game at home in a month, right? That's terrible. And making it even worse, and this is the real kicker here and the worst part about last night. And I'll tell you this, I actually agree with a lot of what Gallant said, and that's not something that I normally do, but I do believe the 40 shots, the puck luck was not going their way. Shea Theodore had a shot early in the game in the first period that went off two posts, and that seemed to be like a consistent theme for him, right? Like, that was a regular thing happening. But I'm going back to what I said that what I wanted to say about what made last night so catastrophic is that it's juxtaposed to what you did on Saturday night. You went out and you beat one of the best teams in the Western Conference. Nay, I say one of the best teams in the entire NHL. And not only did you beat them, you kicked their teeth in. And then you come out 48 hours later and you lay a complete egg. Now, I understand puck luck wasn't going your way. I understand the defense wasn't giving you any help there, right? They were making huge gaffes that were costing you momentum. I understand all that. But at the same time, there's really no excuse for not being able to find the net at least a couple times. Like, I'm okay with losing, but to not back Malcolm Subban up again? Steve, VGK has only had two shutouts this season. Both have been with Malcolm Subban behind the net, and it's just they just for whatever reason can't play for this guy, and they really need to because the Knights need Malcolm Subban. I know they're not going to need him as much in the playoffs, but you need him to rely on him. You need him to feel confident because you need to give Fleury some rest. So positive side, Vegas does get some rest for Fleury. Positive side, Malcolm Subban looks great for all intents and purposes in both games. The negative is that for one of those games, Vegas couldn't help offer him any sort of help, and that has got to be frustrating for Vegas, for the front office, for the fans, for everybody.
Well, let's address a couple of things. First, you mentioned the term puck luck, and I've heard this puck luck thing most of the season. When you're 61 games into the season, is it bad luck anymore?
Well, I'm not going to speak for the whole season. No, if people are constantly harping on puck luck as a narrative throughout the whole season, no, I wouldn't say that. I would say specifically last night from what I saw, I think the fact that the puck wasn't bouncing in the right direction, certainly it wears on you as you get into deep into period two and deep into period three. Like, you just kind of feel like nothing's going your way and things are just kind of avalanching, no pun intended, in the wrong direction. And I think that had the feel last night that just things weren't going their way. Now, if you're talking about the overall season, you know, you can't blame a season on puck luck. You can't just say, well, geez, man, if a couple things just weren't going our way, you know, or if a couple things would just go our way, this season would be an entirely different story. No, that's not the case. Puck luck can't define a whole season. Now, sure, on some level, I think the puck is bouncing a little poorly, more poorly this year than it did last year.
Okay.
But you're talking minute details here, right? You can't blame an entire season or failure, or in this case, lack of consistency on puck luck. You can point to it as a game as being one of the factors as to why you can have 40 shots on goal and not find the back of the net. It can be a bit of an anomaly, but it can't define a whole season.
And let's clarify one thing you said about shutouts, because I think that came across as the Knights have only had two shutouts. You meant two shutouts against.
Correct.
And Subban has been in net as a victim in both of those. Obviously, Marc-Andre Fleury has delivered donuts on six occasions. I think the other thing you said in that long rant that is spot on is following up Saturday.
Yes.
With this sort of effort. And it's happened way too many times this season. And, you know, we've really been on this in recent weeks about this team and its focus and the decision to jettison a couple of guys who maybe drove their teammates nuts. And I still believe that Gerard Gallant is looking for someone other than himself to step up and be a badass before and after games to get these guys a little stronger in terms of sense of urgency.
I completely agree, and I believe it was Nate Schmidt who said after the Nashville game, it was either Schmidt or Theodore, and I'm really sorry, I don't know specifically who it was, because I think it lends credence to the conversation you're talking about, a locker room leader and a vocal leader. I believe it was Schmidt, and he had essentially said, yes, the Nashville win, and I'm referencing Saturday tonight, was a nice win, but let's see how we respond Tuesday in Colorado. Like, they were pumping the brakes, like fully aware that, hey, we play up to our competition, and when we're playing really bad teams, like case in point, a Colorado team that hasn't won at home in a month, we have trouble skating hard. We have trouble staying focused. We have trouble not having mental lapses that seem to define logic, right? Like, it is so frustrating to watch a team look like a Stanley Cup contender on Saturday night, skating all over over the ice, carrying the puck through the neutral zone into the offensive zone, dumping, taking great shots, great looks, being dynamic, most importantly, skating hard, skating focused, skating within yourself, but skating with purpose. And then to see a Tuesday game where it's literally the complete opposite in so many ways, where the effort doesn't seem to be there, where the focus doesn't seem to be there, there's a lapse in judgments. It's just a terrible thing to watch, and it's got to give you cause concern going into the rest of the season and for this playoff push. The positive side, though, is you're in a very weak division. You have a huge buffer between you and Vancouver, and I believe the buffer is like 8 or 9 points. When you're talking about a team that is bad as Vancouver, the fear of getting caught probably isn't there. And Steve, maybe that's the problem. Mm-hmm. Maybe the problem is they don't have anyone breathing down their necks, so they're not skating or playing with the consistency they need on a nightly basis. I don't have an answer because I'm not in the locker room. The best thing you and I can do, and everybody else, is kind of sit from the sidelines, you know, take things at face value, maybe read between the lines when we can, but there are certainly issues in that locker room with consistency, and there is worry that they're not going to get it figured out by the time the spring and summer rolls around for the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Golden Knights lose 3-0 last night in Colorado. Avs are now 500. They were sub 500 before the game. You also thought Belmar and Miller make an early mistake, set a bad tone.
Yeah, that first play, it was early in the first period where Pierre-Édouard Belmar got absolutely snaked by Matt Calvert. After that, it was a weird back and forth between, I believe, John Merrill and Colin Miller, where they couldn't corral the puck, and Matt Calvert turned around and buried a little backhand turnaround that Malcolm Subban never even had a chance to see coming. It was just a really sloppy play. They got caught off guard. They caught with very little focus, and yeah, it did kind of set the tone, at least for me, for the rest of the game, where I was just, it just left a bad taste in my mouth, and I got to wonder if it left a bad taste in the rest of the defense and the rest of the Golden Knights' mouth. And it's really bad when you look at, and this is what I said when I go back to Gallant and not normally agreeing with him, at least, you know, message by message, but I do believe the Knights overall, when you have 40 chance, they played a decent game. But to see it go to waste, and as we brought up with Malcolm Subban, just to see that effort go to waste, it's just such a letdown and such one of, you know what I mean, just like one of those exhale moments where you just kind of wake up this morning and you're like, damn. You just kind of look at the sky and you just hope that Vegas can get it together. You got to hope in the coaches, you got to hope in the front office, and as the trade deadline approaches, it's going to be real interesting to see what this team's going to manage, if they manage anything at all.
Time to hit the biggest news of the day, and that's from baseball. I think it's a great day for baseball. No Yankees, no Phillies, no White Sox. Manny Machado lands in San Diego.
Cofield and Company will be back in 90 seconds. Keep it here on ESPN Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
And the 1-2 from Sabatka's on the way. Line drive headed toward the left field corner. Well hit. It is on its way, and it's gone! Manny Machado and his signature moment as a Los Angeles Dodger. A 3-run home run. And the Dodgers now have a 6-2 lead.
Look at Chrissy rubbing it in a little bit. Manny Machado to the Yankees. Nope. To the Dodgers. Nope. White Sox. We'll get to the White Sox in a couple minutes.
Shut
no
up,
Phillies. It's the Pod Squad. Late entrant into this race a couple of weeks ago. The Padres, outside of 2015, when they went on a trade and free agent binge, rarely spend money. This is one of the great days this century in baseball. Because once again, it sends the message, Ryan, that everyone in baseball can afford the top, top, top players. We've told you a million times the last 20 years covering baseball that everyone has money. They're all given 60, 80, 100 million, you know, depending on market size. They're all given that sort of money to help with their payroll. Spend the freaking money. This is tremendous. I love it. You know what I really love? Is how many people are hypocritical when it comes to baseball players getting money. You know, your option for entertainment getting boosted. I think Padres fans are over the moon. They're completely fired up. But I can't tell you how many people outside the market, outside of San Diego, are like, this doesn't make any sense. It's terrible. He's not going to be there a long time. Why are you rooting against teams being competitive? Why are you rooting against a team like the Padres actually trying This is tremendous. San Diego finally took advantage of being San Diego.
Well,
and you get what I'm saying there, right, Ryan?
100%.
It's an unbelievable drawing card. You can field a great baseball team in San Diego, but you got to try.
Yeah, it's a win for the Padres. It's a win for the Padres fans. And on a deeper level, you bring it up, right? It's a win for baseball fans. I think the issue you're going to run into is how many fans are looking at it, whether right or wrong. I think it's absolutely right. Everyone, Steve, should be looking at it the way you look at it, right? Like, this is a win for baseball because it's a win for the smaller markets, thus a win for parity, thus a win for, you know, anyone, right? Everyone's got a shot now that the San Diego Padres can go out and spend $300 million or the willingness to go out and spend $300 million.
By the way, let me break in here for a second, too. This is the other great misnomer the last 30 years in baseball. Small markets. San Diego is the number 12 market.
Yeah, I guess there's plenty of money, a losing franchise that is known for losing and never wins anything.
You know what? Actually, not a bad franchise from the late 70s into the mid-90s. But so I get your point. The last 20 years, they've had owners who either couldn't afford to own a baseball team or just didn't care, or, like many owners do, they get into a ballpark, and you know what? We know 25,000 people are going to show up. We're going to make money. It's beautiful here in San Diego. Why do we need to give them a good team? They're stupid, and that's mean, but they're going to show up anyway. And those days are done. That should not be the case.
Yeah, and it is. It's a big win for all those. I said this time last year, or actually I guess it was in the summer around the All-Star break, big bats don't sign, and I used Philly as that example, right? I could transition. You know, big bats don't sign in San Diego. Will they get Matt Kemp occasionally? Will they get a guy like that? Yeah, occasionally, right? But they never land. Markets like this never land. A-plus, blue-chip, 26-year-old mega, you know, not prospects. I mean, Manny Machado's way beyond that. We're talking about one of the best baseball players in the league, right? So the fact that he chose to sign, even though it was for the money, a lot of people presumably could have offered Machado that money, but only one group did, or at least one group where Machado wanted to sign, and that is San Diego. You made a great point, though, Steve. It is not a minor market. It's not a small market. It is a large market, and today is the day where San Diego finally used San Diego for being San Diego, right? Yes, Manny Machado signed there in part because of the money, but I also can't help but think that San Diego, the actual locale, had a lot to do with it as well.
Of course.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a dude here who's got a last year fielded posted a career-high 905 OPS, 37 dongs, 107 ribs, 14 stolen bases, hit 300. He is a great player. You threw out the question, it's the biggest free agent deal in America. Is he worth it? Yes, he is. Now, they're going to have to they will have to build from here and add more players. But yeah, to their bottom line, if they do the right things, they're going to make money off this. Yes, he's worth it because he completely turns around the perception of what the Padres are.
Yep. Yeah, you're absolutely right. They're a player now. They're a place where people can land, and they're not the San Diego Padres, right? Like, it's an identity thing. So 100%. It is, as you said, it's a big win for everyone involved, and it's an exciting time. Listen, any time that you can go into work is what we do, sports radio, right? And you can say that the largest contract in free agent American sports history was signed today, Steve. Today. 10 years, $300 million. And here's the question that I can't escape. If Manny Machado's worth 10 and 300, what is Mike Trout going to be worth?
Monster numbers on the way. Maybe. I would assume these teams in a couple of years will still be interested in the best player in baseball at that point. I would also assume that the team that is in a big market that has Mike Trout will hold on to him. There's no way he should get away and have a chance to go anywhere else, but I'm sure there's a chance. Well, I'm sure there's a chance. I think there's a strong chance he'll want to test free agency when that time comes. All right, so when you look at Machado, this is a money selection, right? $300 million. Do you think he's actually bullish on the Padres winning?
I think when he looks... I think Manny Machado is an intelligent enough guy to know that winning isn't going to come in the next couple years, right? I think he knows that. But I would like to think that Manny is also a smart enough guy that he wouldn't just sign somewhere for the money. So when I'm sure when Manny Machado looks at that farm system, and Steve, this farm system is stacked. Number one, they've got... they're interchangeable, right? The top two players right now or top three prospects in baseball are Vlad Guerrero Jr., Eloy Jimenez, and Fernando Tatis Jr. Fernando Tatis, he is in the San Diego Padres system. He is expected to be up with this team by the middle of this year, maybe even earlier. He's going to be in that infield with Machado. He plays the same position as Machado. Not exactly sure how that's going to work out. Doesn't really matter. Point being is the San Diego Padres have a ton of young talent. And when I say a ton, I mean that. So first of all, in the top 27 prospects in Major League Baseball, the Padres have four. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. In the top 100, the top 100 prospects in baseball, the San Diego Padres have 10 players. That is a Major League Baseball record. No team has ever had 10 in the top 100. Now, I get it. I understand that that is talent. That is gauged on possibility. That is not what they are doing. It's a lot of questions up in the air. But when you have an anchor like Manny Machado, and I know they have pitching problems, but we're going to leave that alone. We're strictly talking about this infield. With the talent that they already have right now, I mean, they got Hosmer at the one, and they've got an aging Ian Kinser who probably won't be there, but he's a nice veteran piece to impart wisdom upon. This is a really interesting place to land, and if think about this, they've got money to spend. They have money to spend. They're clearly...
That's the great thing about all this.
Right.
Is I saw earlier in the day, Steve Phillips, who was the GM of the Mets, threw out on satellite radio that the Padres are now screwed. They won't be able to pay for pitching.
No.
Folks, this move... puts the Padres' payroll at like 19th in baseball. In the number 12 market, they're spending $110 million.
Now, think about this.
The Padres have plenty of money. They can add from here. They also have spare players now with all these prospects who may be on the way in the next couple of years. They've got good young outfielders who will either develop on their squad, like Renfro and Margot. They've also got an excess with Cordero and Reyes. So they have guys they can trade. If they can't develop pitchers from within, then they augment via trade or free agency. The Padres are finally headed in the right direction.
And now think about this. I agree with you. They are headed in the right direction. And now they've got this beacon. They've got this emergency signal, whatever you want to call it. Manny Machado just signed there for $300 million. That is a validation on the San Diego Padres. Like, you think we're paying attention today? Imagine the other players in the league that just saw Manny Machado sign with the freaking Padres. It's kind of incalculable. Yes, there's the thought process, okay, the Marlins work, right? Like, okay, well, where's Manny going to be in 4 years? Ha, 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 that's cute. He signed with the Padres. Well, he's 26. It's conceivable that he really does see a future there, and there's a lot of pieces to build around. And Steve, I'll take it a step further. They're still starting pitching that is unsigned right now in the free agent market that the Padres could go out. Let's say this was a swing for those free agents, and I'm talking about two people. Dallas Keuchel, who has had specifically the last couple seasons, has been more than fine and acceptable, obviously, Cy Young winner. And then also on the market is veteran Gio Gonzalez. There's two options right there that as free agency drags on, their price presumably gets driven down a little bit. So there are a lot of interesting options out there for the Padres, and they just got a whole lot more interesting now that they just got that stamp of approval, or that seal of approval, I should say, with Manny Machado signed in to come into Southern California.
I like that Big Mac can be objective on this, because you really should be kind of sad.
I'm sad.
Is this a reality check for places like Chicago?
Yeah.
That it's actually scary. If all of the nice cities in baseball actually tried to take advantage of their nice living conditions and the weather and competed against these teams in the Northeast and the frigid Midwest, how would you ever get players? Because part of this, to me, is choosing San Diego over Chicago. And I like Chicago. I think it's an awesome city. But I don't know, do I want to spend 6 months a year in Chicago as opposed to 6 months a year or more in San Diego?
No.
Me? I'm choosing San Diego.
And it's not even the Chicago, right? It's the South Side. Mm-hmm. It's Comiskey. It's U.S. Cellular, whatever, guaranteed rate field, whatever it is now. That's a big difference between the team up north on the north side with Wrigley Field, right? Like, Wrigley Field offers something there in terms of history and tradition and ambiance that maybe you can sell to a guy like Manny Machado. You can't sell the South Side of Chicago to anyone outside of money, and a major, major market for the chance of being a star. But this is what you just said, is that paradigm, that is shifting, right? And in cities like San Diego, listen, I don't know if there's a nicer ballpark than San Diego. I haven't seen a game there, but I did see Metallica there two summers ago, last summer, and it was incredible. Like, jaw-droppingly incredible. I love the area around it. If I had my choice of where I could play, it would be there. Like, it is one of the best baseball stadiums. Screw, not even baseball stadiums. It is one of the best stadiums I've ever been in, period. Location, weather, sight lines, amenities, everything. So, yeah, this is absolutely a wake-up call for Chicago, especially if they don't land Bryce Harper, which by all indications is there's no chance they're going to land Harper. So a team like the White Sox, who just 15 years ago won a World Series, has shown themselves to be willing to spend money, who actually probably, I'm not going to say a better farm system than the San Diego Padres, but a very similar system with right now better pitching, so thus a better chance to win. Oh, also, they went out, the White Sox went and signed Yonder Alonso, who is Manny Machado's brother-in-law, in the hopes of landing Manny Machado. You have Jose Abreu, you have Moncada, you have the South America pull there. None of it mattered at all. They had the money, they had the draw, they had the city, they had the gumption and the focus and the desire to go out there. And then you hear Ken Williams and Han today, Rick Han, come out and say, not essentially that they were blindsided, but they said they thought they were in the running. The fact that he chose San Diego, not a small market, but a market that a lot of people didn't actually expect Manny to land in, that he shuns Chicago for San Diego, it is definitely a kick in the gut, and Chicago's going to have to take a long, hard look in the mirror and wonder, are they what they thought they were?
We'll get back to Machado and how it affects Bryce Harper after 4 o'clock, but up next, more of those Rick Pitino rumors emerging on Twitter for the UNLV gig.
Finley Toyota. They'll do anything to sell you a car. No Toyota problem is too tough, too large, or too small. Keep your Toyota running like a Toyota. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, rolling on this Tuesday. We're getting ready for UNLV in Wyoming. That's a 7 o'clock start, so we'll carry it until 6:30. Cofield here in lovely Laramie, Wyoming. It is 4 o'clock local time, just about. How annoying are weather updates? Weather complaining. It's 12 here. It's 12. It's 12. It's 12. So I went to break mentioning the UNLV gig. Did you notice the way I did that? Pitino and the UNLV gig. First of all, there is no gig. It's not open. So this conversation about the next coach at UNLV is a bit premature. The season's not over, and the Rebels have actually won some games recently that they should have. They're taking care of business. This is another one of those games tonight. But, Ryan, they're 14-11 and 8-5 in conference. They could close strong. Hell, if they go 11-7 in conference, they get to the semis of the Mountain West Conference Tournament, maybe they pull the upset on Reno. Not likely, but play them competitively. I wonder what is going to happen with the job. Marvin Menzies in just his third year, but the pot is being stirred again. Very fine Twitter account that covers Las Vegas very well. Las Vegas locally yesterday had the tweet, UNLV is in serious talks with Coach Rick Pitino, according to a source. Your reaction?
Okay. I mean, me personally, I guess I can only say this from my view, right? Me personally, I don't want to see Rick Pitino anywhere near NCAA basketball ever again. I don't like him. I don't trust him. Mm-hmm. I think he is a part of an old guard and an old way of business, and I do mean business. I don't think he has any place in the sport. I don't think anybody like him has any place in the sport, but that's the problem. Steve, he is the majority, not the minority. I feel like I could be saying this about so many major programs.
He's the majority in terms of his actions, aside from, I don't know how many coaches have in the past impregnated a woman in 15 seconds right at an Italian restaurant. I don't know that part. But his other activities, yes. It probably is more the norm than the outlier, but he's not the majority in terms of being caught. He's exactly been caught repeatedly, and he doesn't give a rat's ass. Mm-hmm. And all of this stuff about Rick Pitino taking over UNLV, and the job isn't open, reeks of being so pathetic from Vegas fans. And really, anyone who has interest in Rick Pitino, there is more than one coach in the world who can come into a program and turn them into a winner. There are options. First of all, I think Marvin Menzies deserves another year. I think they are going to win next year at a much higher level, unless they have horrific injury luck like they had this year, losing their best player before the season, Shakur Justin. People don't mention that very often. But if you were going to turn the page, there are lots of fine coaches, young, some with good experience, some who have had big jobs and are also out of a job right now, who you could bring in and wouldn't carry the baggage that Pitino brings to town.
Oh.
And I do not believe if, whether it's Menzies who wins or a coach with a bigger name who takes over and that person wins, if someone is winning, the fans will come back out. You saw, and it was a rivalry game, but the crowd against Reno was more than solid. This town is sports crazy, and I got to tell you, I totally disagree with Koken, who does a show before us. This is not a desperation situation. This is not a pathetic situation where they have to go out and get, you know, the renegade, whether it's Pitino or that dirtbag Eustachy. This school doesn't have to do that, and UNLV is far from buried. There is more money now in town than there's ever been. The Knights are not always going to be riding high, as we're seeing right now. By the way, I just saw 1,600 tickets available for resale up on ESPN. I'd have to look through to see who their preferred partner is. I assume StubHub. There's a place in the market for UNLV, and if UNLV gets back to a level where they're making the NCAA tournament, let's say 50% of the time, right? The goal would be all the time, two-thirds of the time. And they're playing good opponents.
Yep.
Out of conference. They're bringing a couple of big boys into town, and they're the lone school in this conference that can do that. They can do home and homes with big-time schools. If they're doing that, and they're winning 11-12 minimum in the Mountain West Conference, and they're posting 22, 23, 24 wins, people will come back out. It's not a desperate situation. I know the crowds right now don't look that good, but the fans are coming back with solid winning.
Consistent winning, right? That's all you want as a fan of any franchise is when you go in the arena and you pay your $40, you pay your $50, that you're watching a game that actually means something. Now, in certain instances, you can have a bad team and you go to watch the prospects. You want to see the future of the team. The problem is that UNLV has been inconsistent for such a period of time that that's the reflection that you're seeing, the lack of the fans. The fan base is clearly still there, Steve.
It's there. Believe me, folks.
100%.
If you use social media as a gauge, is the interest what it was in UNLV basketball, say, 8 years ago? No. But it is still something that garners attention. Most of it's negative right now, but people care. People are fired up. So they're not that far off from getting crowds back in the Thomas and Mack.
No.
And I just, the desperation from people who aren't around the program, aren't around the players, aren't in the arena, it's just, come on, folks. You don't know what you're talking about. You don't have to bring in a guy like Rick Pitino.
Well, no, I would. I hate the Pitino move for a couple of reasons. One, this program was marred in controversy going back a couple decades, right? I don't think you let that. I mean, I know it was a great time for UNLV fans, but it also at the same time, there's a lot of basketball fans out there that remember it for the controversy and for the scandal, right? Now, why you would do that and bring it back around 30 years later with a guy who has had success, yes, but it's a way more scandal than Tark ever had, by the way. I mean, multiple, as you said. This is a guy that constantly gets in his own way and also lacks any sort of semblance of remorse or apology. He parlays the responsibility off on